better put him in the Heisman.
Got that wood right here, baby.
This is the Busch Light Apple Morning Rush Podcast. Busch Light Apple, the newest beer in the Busch family.
Guys, I've been listening to y'all since this show aired.
When I turn on the Morning Rush, I want to hear Ty at his best every single day.
There are people that have saved up all year and done whatever it took just to get a ticket, just to get a glimpse at the Razorback.
Ty, fortunately, has saved the world and not yet procreated.
This is the Busch Light Apple Morning Rush Podcast.
Just the other day, we were speaking to the different coaches on the Arkansas campus yet to take a pay cut, yet to be furloughed. Arkansas, luckily, to this point, has not had to go through any of that process. They've avoided layoffs, salary cuts, and furloughs to this point, which is what Matt Jones wrote in his article in Whole Hog yesterday. But they are doing this thing where they are deferring the bonuses that coaches could make this year to 2021. This is kind of the first step financially that it looks like the U of A is going to take as far as a bid goes. And the bonuses are around $2 million, it looks like, is what it's going to be. Now, these bonuses don't necessarily have to be paid out because they're not fulfilled all the time, especially football the last couple of years because of how bad you've been. But this is one of the first big financial steps. And if you remember what Sam Pittman had to say when it comes to taking a pay cut, he said, the bottom line is we will do whatever we need to do to have success at Arkansas and keep all, not just football, all programs alive. And if we need to take a pay cut, we'll take a pay cut. That's what Sam Pittman said during his Zoom press conference a couple weeks ago. He's already been on the record on that. He hasn't had to take one to this point. But he said he will, if possible. But the bonuses, deferring them to next year, is really the first step that's been taken as far as financially that's been across the board at the University of Arkansas when it comes to the athletic department. So when you saw this news yesterday, what were your initial thoughts, Tommy?
Well, I mean, I refer to those as contingent liabilities. Those are potential bills you may or may not have with coaching bonuses. So you're not wiping away a bill you definitely will have. So these are, they sound good. They make nice headlines, but those $2 million you may get out of,
it's like up to.
Yeah, it's up to, and only if you had great success in three sports.
And just to put this in perspective,
it's not guaranteed savings.
Correct, but it is some sort of savings. It's not up to $2 million. Okay, well, just.
Well, I mean, if you didn't have great. First of all, you got to win a certain number of games for Sam Pittman to get there.
Correct.
He's got to win at least eight games for him to cash in on the bonuses. Now, some of it's tied to APR with these coaches' contracts. With APR and academic success, there's some small bonuses. And generally, they clear some of these hurdles. But the big bonuses are tied to division championships, conference championships, national championships. Point being, Arkansas would have to win a lot in three sports for $2 million of bonuses to rack up.
And the majority would be in football. Just to put this in perspective, last year they paid out $700,000. Year before it was $1 million. So even if it wasn't, and again, those are, 2 years of crappy football. Mm-hmm. So that being said, they're still saving.
Sure.
Like if you want to ballpark at $850,000 or $1 million or whatever, and that's still, I mean, that's a good chunk of change still at the end of the day.
I think also, and this is just putting in perspective where you're at with the head. You're with a head coach that's, his base salary is what, $3 million? And he's making more money on his base salary than he's made in his career. Let's just be honest about the perspective of where you're at with him. So it's not a lifestyle adjustment. This is not a coach that, he was making $4 million, now you're cutting him back. He's adjusted up to the lifestyle he's at now. He's at a point in life where he doesn't have kids. He doesn't need to probably make major lifestyle adjustments for anything you're asking for of him now. He's been used to making less than $1 million. Now, that doesn't give you liberty to just go in and start, hey, coach, you don't need it. You know, no one wants to be taken advantage of. But Sam Pittman, for the first time in his life, is making this kind of money, I guess is my point.
Yeah, and that's, if you look across the board in the SEC, it's one of the lowest, if not the lowest. I'd have to go back and check because they haven't updated the USA Today salaries list comparing him to the other schools and where they're at.
No, you're right on that, though.
So, and that's important because, again, his lawyer and agent, whatever, out of Little Rock was, and I remember him saying this story. He's like, well, they were asking, they were divvying out, the salary, thinking about it and stuff. He's like, that sounds great to me. Like, and
right.
But we also need to stress that his contract is incentive-based,
right.
Which is very important because you want a guy that has incentive to win football games and not get fat and happy like it seemed with Brett
right.
Bielema.
I should have. We should have it printed here, and we don't, but I'm 99%. I've got most of these facts right, but it's $3 million base, and then if he gets 8 wins, he starts getting a pretty good chunk that gets him up to nearly $4 million based on wins, starting at 8, 9, 10. As his win totals go up, the base salary goes up for that year. So that's how his contract structure is laid out. So that's the crux of his contract structure.
And if you remember, Hunter Yurecek a while back says not winning games or not winning football games is with cause or fireball with cause. What was his exact words? And I know that's more of just a statement that he said. And it was,
Arkansas along with, and Arkansas is obviously paying former coaches right now or in litigation with Brett Bielema about they have let coaches go and they're having to pay him, but losing should be a reason to fire a coach with cause. And that has not been in the contract language, not just at Arkansas, but across college sports. And Hunter Yurecek, now that's red meat to the base because Arkansas fans are tired of paying out, you know, to Chad Morris, to Brett Bielema, to any former coach that you have to fire for losing and losing miserably. You know, never getting anything done, never in your career accomplishing anything, and we're going to pay you millions of dollars to go away. I mean, you get tired of that. And so, I mean, when an AD says something, that's just music to your ears as a fan.
It's not necessarily true.
Huh?
They can't really enforce that, right?
Well, no, because you'd be in violation of your agreement.
Exactly.
Now, what Hunter Yurecek is saying is we need to change the narrative in college sports. Now, I'm going to tell you, the opening is here right now for the narrative of how these agreements are set up. The cattle gate is swung wide open for this to all change in the here and now for the world of college athletics. We'll see if that opportunity is seized by the administrations around college sports, because it was going to take something of this nature for the bubble to burst, and then I think there will be massive changes in the structure of how this is done.
I know you joked with Terry Mahajer, the Arkansas State Athletic Director. Did it have to come to a worldwide pandemic for Arkansas to be eligible to play Arkansas State? And you said that kind of jokingly, but in reality, it's kind of true.
I think we're at a global pandemic to get the structure of how buyouts will be legally structured on paper in contracts. And I think there's a lot of ADs that privately feel the same way Hunter Yurecek feels. If a coach isn't cutting it and he's not winning games, we shouldn't have to pay you 80% of your contract or however you got it set up. We shouldn't have to pay Brett Bielema the money or Chad Morris. And this is repeated over and over and over across college football.
It's
this is a unique
to
it's not an Arkansas only thing. You know. Texas A&M is going to have to give Jimbo Fisher, if they fired him, the rest of his $75 million, whatever's left.
And do you know his buyout?
It's 100%.
No. Do you know, like, if he was to leave, do you know who
his zero. He doesn't have to pay zero if he leaves. So I think the structure of all of that will change, and the opening for administration to do that is the here and now.
And when it comes to the bonuses, Kevin Trainer, who is the chief public relations officer at the U of A, had to say that he doesn't expect this trend to continue. This is just looking like a one-year thing because we don't obviously expect the coronavirus to exceed past this year.
You want to be paying out bonuses if you're the U of A.
You're listening to the Busch Light Apple Morning Rush Podcast. It's like the sound of refreshment meets the taste of the orchard.
Everybody's staying home. Now he does a tightrope act. Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're number 3. And nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs! Holy Hog!
People react to criticism in different ways. Some take it head on. Some avoid it. They just don't listen to it. Sometimes it's good. Sometimes it's bad how they react to it. Well, once again, from another college football source, Sam Pittman is listed as the 14th best coach in the league, which is last place. This comes from Pete Futak of College Football News. I think it's saying his last name right. But he has Sam Pittman at the very bottom of his list. Now, Here's the thing. I spoke to this earlier when it comes to Mike Leach, Eli Drinkwitz, and Lane Kiffin. The four new head coaches in this conference, you're going to be judged by the hires you make, your recruiting, and then what happens on the field this year. I think those are really the three main bases of points that are going to be argued for or against these coaches. Well, so far, if you look, and Tommy and I were speaking of this the other day, if you look at who Kendall Briles and Barry Odom are compared to the other coordinators that Mike Leach, and he's the OC, Lane Kiffin's really the OC, and then Eli Drinkwitz, who's probably going to have a huge hand in the offense, have hired, it looks like that Arkansas probably wins that. Recruiting-wise, if you look at the current rankings right now, Arkansas is ahead in that category. Now it's about, hey, what are you going to do in the 2020 season? Now, I don't think any of you expect Arkansas to have the best record over Missouri, over Ole Miss, over Mississippi State, but you at least have to be in the conversation. Now, again, you don't have to be first of those four, but you can't be dead last and not come even close. This is the time where you've moved on from hiring, the recruiting process. We're getting closer and closer to the college football season. Can Sam Pittman show once again, hey, you may have doubted this hire. You may have doubted me as just an offensive line coach, but this is what I've done in recruiting. This is what I've done with my hires. This is now what I'm doing on the football field, and it's going in the right direction.
Listen, I mean, putting Sam Pittman at number 14, if we objectively look at this, is probably correct. I mean, Sam has not been a coordinator. He's never been a head coach at this level. He's been a position coach and the most sought after, one of the most respected offensive line coaches in the country. It doesn't mean that his knowledge or his ability, his special gift to connect and build relationships with players and recruits and their parents and the people within his organization isn't ahead of his counterparts. You know, the things that really matter, the things I just spoke about, that bond he builds with his team that is spoken about, the reason former players went to bat for him to get this job. Now, can all of that equate to their motivation to go win ball games for him? We'll find out, because there's a lot more that goes into the mix of winning a game on a Saturday than just they want to run through a brick wall for you. You know, you got to develop players, you got to have a game plan. I mean, you can go for hours on the things that go into it. But just because Eli Drinkwitz was a one-year head coach at App State doesn't mean he's got exponential more knowledge about being a head coach than Sam Pittman.
And we got to remember that Appalachian State has had good teams over the years. And that's why there was questions about Mike Norvell, because he took over a program behind Justin Fuente that was pretty rock solid. So, now, it's a lot easier to take over a program that's solidified rather than come in and try and establish or reestablish something like Arkansas that has been lost over the last couple of years.
But if you know, there's going to be this list with Pete Futak, and there's been others before. Guess what? There's going to be more to come that has Sam at the bottom, because he can't check the box that the other 13 guys do. And that's at least a year under your belt to being a head coach somewhere. And that's what makes it safe and easy. When you're putting your list together, you know what's easy? Saban at 1 and Sam at 14. That's what's when you start putting this list together, whether you're Pete in this one or anything else we've looked at and talked about, that's what's easy. Then you just start figuring out 2 and 2 to 13.
You don't think Ed's automatically 2 as well coming off the Natty?
Maybe. I mean, I'm just saying Nick at 1 and starting Sam back at 14 right now. That's easy for you if you're putting one of these together, mm-hmm, and you're not in the state of Arkansas and you're not, because let's face it, if you're here and you're wanting to put Sam somewhere other than at the bottom, you have a Razorback agenda, because Coach Pittman's the only guy that can't check the box of being a head coach before at, mm-hmm, this level. I mean, and we got to be honest, experience does matter, right? We can't say it doesn't mean anything. Of course it means something.
That's what I said when he initially got hired, and I just got scathed against the rails for saying that, for bringing that up.
Well, I mean, experience does matter in any job.
I agree. 100%. 100%.
But I think when you lack experience, what do? You do exactly what Sam Pittman has done. You go hire
a former city head coach.
You go hire a Barry Odom, and you go hire a Kendall Briles, and you hire a bunch of other great assistant coaches around you. And I think we're seeing that's worked out. And so far, the only thing you can evaluate, let's see, what are we, 7 months in, 7.5 months in? The only things you can evaluate, and you know, considering all the other extenuating circumstances, they're really the only thing you can evaluate is recruiting at this point, commitment totals. I mean, much else is just conjecture at this point. I would say so far, what Sam has put together has worked, is successful. I mean, with 17 commitments and a recruiting ranking somewhere in the mid to upper 20s by most people's opinion.
Let's talk about these coaches real quick. So you mentioned the different coaches he's hired. I think Barry Odom, that name is recognizable not only in the SEC but across college football. He's done great things at Memphis. He's done good things at Missouri on the defensive end. And if we're being really honest, Missouri made a mistake in firing him. I think that the like going from him to Drinkwitz now, if they would have had just some incredible – I think he – and I asked him this. I asked him straight up when he came on the show, Coach, how motivated are you – after being fired by your alma mater? And that would be the equivalent of, like, think of a famous Arkansas player that, like, became head coach and got let go. Mm-hmm. That would motivate the dickens out of me to prove them wrong. And I asked, Coach, how motivated are you to prove them wrong? And he kind of went into this really kind of coach speak or whatever. But there is
he wouldn't even give him bulletin board material.
There's probably some fire in him that would burn. And listen, I completely understand that. I am very akin and very in love with my university, the University of Arkansas. But if I was ever to work for them in some capacity and to be let go, I would be ticked off and wanting to prove them wrong.
And period. That game, the Arkansas-Missouri game, is so far off. You can't burn all your energy up thinking about that game when you got a potentially 11 more in front of it.
Yeah, exactly. And then moving on to Kendall Briles, and we'll get the other coaches coming up. We'll also get some calls, 877-377-6963. We were having the debate the other day. Kendall has had success at Baylor, at FAU, at Houston. Florida State had an uptick with him. It wasn't the same level of success that you saw with the other schools, but he's had some quarterbacks. We spoke to Seth Russell about this, former Baylor QB, Lake Seastrun, who is a Baylor running back as well, and just the different offensive philosophies that he has been able to establish, and it's really exciting and stuff. The knock on him, and really, if you look, and you can talk about the what happened at Baylor or whatever, but the only knock on Kendall Briles is that he hasn't done it in this conference. Mm-hmm. If you look at his track record with coaches, or excuse me, with quarterbacks, with running backs, with wide receivers, really the only knock that you're like, man, Veer and Shoot, we haven't seen him try to employ it in this conference as a first-year offensive coordinator. That's really the only knock that I want to get into.
But let me just be snarky. Has he had a chance to yet? You know, he hadn't done it yet. Why? Because he had a chance right?
To yet. Yeah, I mean, you could say that, but then which you could have said the same thing about Chad Morris, him having success. Well, he hadn't had a chance to do it in the SEC. It didn't pan out.
Right. But that doesn't mean that Kendall Briles won't.
Oh, 100%. I think when I make that
statement. Come on. Give the guy a chance to fail.
I mean, when I say that statement, that's not me saying that I think he's going to fail in the Southeastern Conference. All I'm saying is we know where the cream of the crop is when it comes to college football.
You're right. But
it's the SEC and particularly the SEC West.
But I think some people out there hear that, as a mark or a blemish on his resume, when really it's a hole, I guess, to a degree, but it's not a failure because he hasn't had the opportunity yet. Now he's got the chance. Let's see if he can capitalize on it. Let's see if he can convert.
Well, I'll just translate to Sam Pittman. All we have to do is say that he's had success in a lot of other capacity in the SEC, but he hasn't had the opportunity to become a head coach. But what do we keep knocking him for? The fact that he hasn't been a head coach. The same applies to Kendall Briles. He's had success other places, but he hasn't had success in the SEC. That's not, again, like you're saying, that's not to say that they can't have success, but the knock comes from the perspective of they haven't done it in Pittman's case in the head coaching capacity, in Briles' case in the SEC.
Yeah, but Briles has had success as an offensive coordinator pretty much every step of the way. Now, Florida State, a little different set of circumstances there, just everything considered, what's going on with Willie Taggart, right? But
I thought that was rhetorical.
I mean, you're right. I mean, it went horribly wrong at Florida State in that last year. But, I mean, Kendall Briles has built a reputation for himself as an offensive coordinator. And I'm just saying everywhere he's been, offensive success has followed him from Baylor to Houston to Florida. I mean, everywhere he's been, there's been offensive success and numbers and stats to back up that, mm-hmm. hey, this guy knows what he's doing. You know, one thing he said with Chad Morris is, you know, there's numbers. You go to Clemson where he was OC. As a head coach at SMU, there's numbers and stats that which tell a lot of the story, but not always all the story. But the record didn't necessarily, and maybe there wasn't enough time. That was kind of the narrative we wanted to fool ourselves in.
When
looking
he goes
back,
7-6,
and he said, "Well, at SMU, that's a pretty good record." I think that's what we, you know, at the end of the day, yeah, the record at SMU wasn't awesome, you know. So,
I mean, I we can make arguments up and down all day long and stuff, but I'd say, you said,
we don't know with Kendall Briles yet in the SEC.
Period. 100%.
It's not like he was at Auburn or was at Georgia or was somewhere else and failed. Well, he hadn't done it in the SEC yet. Well, he hadn't had a chance to do it yet.
Well, okay, let's look at this. So he's participated. He's coached in the Big 12. He's coached Houston's in the American Athletic. FAU is, I'm forgetting, Florida State's ACC. Jenkins, we look up real quick what FAU is, and I can't think of what
the American too?
They're in
Conference USA.
Right. They're in UCF and stuff. So, again, you like to make fun of Big 12 football because there's no defense. So, no defense there. You go to either Houston or FAU.
Well, am I making fun or making or just stating a fact? So
it's a combination of both. But, like, again, you haven't done it in this thing. And, again, that's not – I hate saying it's a knock, but it's a knock because you like, –
No, the point is you're making is a factual statement that until you do it against the best defenses in the country, you got to prove you can do it against the best coordinators and the best defensive athletes in the nation.
Correct. With
that had the best speed in the secondaries and the best size on the front lines
and
the best group. I mean, this league has the best athletes at all three levels. They're
correct.
The best on the defensive line. They got the best linebackers and the most speed you'll see in the secondaries. You got to prove that your system will work against that.
I'm trying to think. Baylor has played like North Carolina. I'm trying to think what Michigan State. I'm trying to think what SEC teams they played when they matched
someone
up.
I don't know. Someone asked us, what is his record against SEC
and that's
teams?
I
don't know the answer to that. It's a great question.
That's a great question to ask. And I didn't even notice that, but that just kind of popped in my head when you look at
right.
what his offenses have been able to do against SEC teams. But I think like, When you play like an LSU or Alabama and you're lining up against Surtain or Derek Stingley Jr., who's the best cornerback in the country, how much of a difference? How do you change your game plan? And listen, you're excited about the skill positions that Arkansas has, whether it's Traylon Burks, whether it's Trey Knox, whether it's Rakeem Boyd and others. But again, does the offensive line have enough time and stuff? And what also needs to be mentioned is, and Rod, we'll get to your call in just one sec, is that it can't happen in year one. And I don't think, Tommy doesn't think it's going to happen in year one. I don't think it's going to happen in year one, but there needs to be more progress in year one of Kendall Briles than there was at Chad Morris. 877-377-6963 is the number to call or text in if you want to get in on the conversation. We're talking coaches. We're talking Sam Pittman once again being at the bottom of the list in the SEC coaching rankings. Rod on I-40 wants to talk about it. Rod, you're on the Morning Rush.
Yeah. Good morning, guys. How you doing?
We're good, Rod.
Hey, Drinkwitz from Appalachian State. That's the first one. Isn't that a bit like Chad Morris from SMU? I mean, seriously.
I mean, Drinkwitz is got a similar path of what we're talking about with Kendall Briles. I mean, he's a proven offensive coordinator that got a shot as a head coach at Appalachian State, a program that's had recent consistent success. He falls out of the Malzahn tree to a degree. Was with him at Springdale, or in that Springdale path, Arkansas State, went to Boise State, success there. It was with Harbison. I may not be saying that name right.
I have
followed
no
him from Arkansas State. Went out to.
Talking about Brian Harsin?
Right, Harsin. Okay. Went to North Carolina State. I mean, so let's not paint Drinkwitz as a Johnny come lately. I mean, he was a very successful offensive coordinator before he became a one-year head coach at App State, before he became now a second-year head coach at Missouri. So, I mean, let's not misrepresent who Eli Drinkwitz is. He's not just some newcomer.
Well, Barry Odom if he had been named our head coach, what would he have been ranked?
I think you asked that the other day, didn't you, Ron? Didn't you ask that the other day?
No, not exactly the same way, but similar. You know, I had, you know, we've been happy if he'd been named our coach. I think he's looking at Missouri right now like, I love you, but if, you know, you come at me, I'm going to put your hands through the butt in my microwave and slam your door.
Yeah. Oh, no, that's, I mean, that's what I would, too. I mean, and Rod, appreciate the call this morning. So if I'm Barry Odom and I'm looking at that final game and you brought this up, that can't be – You can't waste all your energy on that particular game because it's the last game on your schedule. But I'm looking at the University of Missouri, or Missouri University, however you want to say it, however it is said, and I want to put those guys in a blender. Now, I know there's going to be a lot of time and prep to multiple games this season, but I can't believe truly that there isn't going to be a little more of an edge that you'll see from Barry Odom heading in that game. He comes across as a level-headed, even-keeled, clean, cool guy. We've had him on, I think, once or twice based on the press conferences and stuff. He seems pretty steady Eddie. But there's going to be some fire. Not to say there's not going to be fire for other games, but particularly for that game because of what that university meant to him and how it all played out.
So to answer your question, Rod, I'll give you my opinion. If you flip some titles around and Barry Odom was your head coach and Sam Pittman was your offensive coordinator and Kendall Briles was your quarterback coach, let's just flip some titles around. Somebody else was your DC. And Pete Futak was putting this list together. I think Barry Odom's on this list at 11 or 12 or somewhere. He's not 14, but he's not 4 either. That fair?
Oh, I agree. Yeah, I agree. I mean, so he's above Drink. He's above, I don't know, him and Stoops are probably about the same. I'd have to go.
He's somewhere in the bottom third, but he's not in the middle, and he's not in the, certainly not in the top tier. But that and I think that's the question you're driving at is what's the opinion of that? And it's solely based on the idea that he's got head coaching experience. It's not that Pete Futak would think that well Barry Odom's of a much sharper football mind than Sam Pittman. It goes back to the resume deal. So and when it comes to Drinkwitz, he's got the 1 year. And let's face it, where is it easier to get a few more wins a year? In the Eastern Division of the SEC? Or the Western Division? Well, we all know it's the East is got a few more opportunities year in, year out that the West doesn't have.
You're hoping that flips because it used to be the East was the tougher place to get a W. Now it's changed to the West. You're hoping when Saban retires and just stuff kind of plays out where it becomes the easier path. But as Tommy mentioned, Missouri does have an easier path when it comes to getting W's this upcoming season.
Florida's on the uptick again. Tennessee, if Pruitt's recruiting remains consistent, and Tennessee becomes, because that's the way it was in the 90s. Florida was good, Tennessee was good, Georgia was okay, but now Georgia's really good, Tennessee's getting better. I mean, and Florida's back to, I don't know if they're going to be as good as they were with Spurrier, but if you get those three programs all being competitive for the Eastern Division every year, that's going to be a tougher division.
And Mark Stoops won, I believe, 8 games this past season for Kentucky. He's done a really good job there for a school that's so focused on basketball. Vanderbilt's a cupcake as usual. Missouri has been kind of the cup. Now, they weren't when Gary Pinkel initially came in, but they've really been the cupcake as late relative to the other SEC schools that you play. But I'm just wondering how long it's going to take, if it's going to take, for the SEC East to overtake the West when it comes to that side of things. But it is, unfortunately, not only are you playing in the Southeastern Conference, but you're playing in the toughest division of the SEC and in college football, which is a tough thing. If you look at the other coaches, Sam Carter was from Missouri. John Cooper, I think, was USF, South Florida, if I remember that correctly. Brad Davis was at Mizzou as well. Derek LeBlanc was at Kentucky.
Right.
Ryan Rhodes was at Hutchinson Community College. I can't remember if he was the head coach or if he was the head coach.
Yes.
Okay. And then Jimmy Smith was down there in Georgia coaching JUCO. He was at high school, and then I think he was coaching JUCO, if I remember that correctly. I know he's down from Georgia, and then Step obviously was at SMU. He's done a really good job recruiting and stuff. But you mentioned like the coaching. I think one moment that stands out in particular, and it was LeBlanc and Barry Odom that were tried to be hired away in the offseason by other SEC schools, and it didn't end up happening because Arkansas paid, I think it was $100K to Barry Odom, or maybe $150K.
I think both of them got $100K.
Is that
raised?
Additional raise. So,
right.
Like, these are guys that are coveted, and I can't tell you about the other ones as much, but Step Stepp is one of the best wide receiver recruiters in the Southeastern Conference, and I think that's evident, especially if he gets Ketron Jackson, who he's fighting for with TCU and some other schools right now. His reputation is only going to keep going up, and the players really like him. Now, if that translates to the field, that's going to be important because the potential is there, obviously, with Burks, Knox, Woods, and others, but you need to see that production now as well with the combination of Kendall Briles. Where do you look up Smith? I didn't know if that's what you were doing.
No, I just pulled out this sheet here. I think it's very interesting to watch what happens with the player development along the offensive and defensive lines. We continue to focus on that. It's something Clay talks about a lot. You mentioned Brad Davis, and we know that Sam Pittman's going to be hyper-focused on that. I really want to see, because we've heard a lot of great things said about Derek LeBlanc and how great Kentucky's defensive lines were. That was why they zeroed in on this guy and really wanted him on the Arkansas staff. Kentucky had awesome defensive lines, and that's why Kentucky won a lot of ball games. That was why Arkansas had a lot of difficulty moving the ball against Kentucky last year. Their defensive lines made it difficult. So I'm very interested, particularly if they go to this 3-5 setup and you got three guys with their hand down. What's Arkansas going to look like up front, and what kind of difference can he make?
Smith was at Georgia State. I knew he was down in Georgia. I couldn't remember what particularly. But, yeah, you mentioned LeBlanc. He is going to hopefully help solidify that defensive line and get those boys going.
You're listening to the Busch Light Apple Morning Rush Podcast. New light lager made with natural apple flavors, available now for a limited time.
The crowd did good. They just threw him out of the game. He's gotten his second technical, and he's been thrown out of the ball game.
Going to the phone lines, welcoming in Eric Hansen, co-host of the Weekday Sports Beat there in South Bend, also writer at the South Bend Tribune. Eric, I know you're busy in the morning, so I appreciate you making some time for us, man, on the Morning Rush.
Well, I appreciate you having me on, and I'm well caffeinated, so I'm ready for your question.
There you go, man. There you go. So, man, a lot of Arkansas fans had this game circled on their calendar. Razorbacks taking on the Fighting Irish in South Bend, a game that the Hogs have never traveled to. I know my brother, he's already bought his plane ticket. Many of my friends had bought their Airbnb. And now it doesn't look like that many, if any, Arkansas fans are going to be able to attend. Eric, what are your thoughts on the attendance for the Notre Dame-Arkansas game and how it's going to shake out?
You know, I had a chance to talk to Notre Dame Athletic Director Jack Swarbrick last week. We haven't touched base this week yet. But at that point, I asked him what kind of priority was there for the Navy-Arkansas-Western Michigan game, the three remaining non-ACC games on their schedule. And he was kind of ambivalent about it. They're really driven at this point about what the ACC is going to do. And I know Pete Thamel from Yahoo yesterday mentioned the ACC maybe mid next week is going to unveil a 10 game conference schedule and a plus one. So that would leave Notre Dame a chance to play somebody outside the ACC. And I do expect their schedule to be heavy, heavy ACC. So that could be Arkansas. At this point, I think we'll have a better idea in the middle of next week if Arkansas becomes a priority.
Eric, on the note of that, Tommy and I were discussing this earlier this week. While Notre Dame is technically an independent, they do have six ACC games on their schedule. So with what you're talking about, will they be required, if they're admitted to play ACC teams, to follow what the ACC protocol is for this upcoming college football season?
Well, I think they want to do that. When I asked Jack Swarbrick about that, he said they've been a great partner and they were going to make sure that Notre Dame wasn't left scrambling for opponents. Again, three of their games disappeared with the Pac-12 and the Big Ten going to conference-only schedules, and the games they lost were Stanford, USC, and Wisconsin. So I think they're happy to kind of fall in line with what the ACC is doing. And again, I expect it to be a heavy ACC schedule. You know, their testing standards are probably at least what the ACC is doing, if not a little bit more. They've been really successful in terms of players being on campus. There was a positive test when the players arrived in June, and then there has been one positive test since then.
Yeah. How much longer do you believe Notre Dame can remain somewhat independent in football, or do you think this will begin the movement for Notre Dame becoming a member of the ACC at some point in the near future in football as well?
Well, their desire, and they've done referendums and stuff, mostly with the Big Ten, but they really want to stay independent, and they would not join the ACC or any other conference, but it would be the ACC unless they were forced to. So what could force them to do that? There's a few things. One is if their NBC contract goes away and they don't have someone else to kind of pick that up. Number two, and this is probably the most important one, is if the rules changed about access to the college football playoff. If at some point it became conference champions only, then that would cause Notre Dame to look at a conference. And the third part already kind of happened once, and that's why they're in the ACC in most sports. If they didn't have a place for their basketball teams, for their Olympic sports teams to play, and that happened when the Big East imploded, that would be a problem, and they would have to look at a conference. They were fortunate that the ACC kind of let them in halfway. The deal is they play an average of five ACC football schools a year. This year it happens to be six. You know, some years it's four, but typically it's five. So that's where they're at. So there's really no desire for them to push into a conference.
11-2 a year ago. What was the expectation in South Bend? I know there's a national fan base. There's always a lot of expectation in recent years for Notre Dame. What was the expectation around the Fighting Irish program this year if there had been a 12-game season?
Well, I think they were pretty excited about it. Since they had their divot of 4-8 in 2016, they've been 33-6 over the last 3 years. And they have a third-year starting quarterback, all five starting offensive linemen back. They only have a couple position groups that are kind of iffy, you know, young wide receivers and young cornerbacks. They didn't change schemes in the offseason, which is great during a pandemic that you have some familiarity with schemes. So there was a lot of optimism. You know, when you looked at the schedule, the bumps were Wisconsin, a game that's gone away, USC, a game that's gone away, and a game that's still on the schedule, Clemson in November. So that Clemson game, Clemson coming to Notre Dame Stadium, you know, a lot of people are pretty excited for that, to see how they measure up after getting dusted by Clemson in the 2018 playoff.
Eric Hansen with us, co-host of the Weekday Sports Beat and writer at the South Bend Tribune, talking Notre Dame football. Eric, you mentioned Pete Thamel's report of Yahoo Sports speaking to the 10-game plus one. So if Notre Dame, you mentioned, has six ACC games on their schedule, would they add four more? Like, how are they going to go about doing that in accordance with, you talking with Jack Swarbrick, how are they going to go about doing that with Swofford over there at the ACC?
Yeah, well, you know, they're fortunate in that the ACC only plays eight conference games. So those conference schools are all going to have to add a couple of games. And they would add Notre Dame as if it were a conference. They'd almost play as if they were a conference team this year. At least that's the most popular model that they're looking at. So there are schools that have to pick up games. They're going to drop some of their non-conference games, and as we mentioned, plus ones. I think the where they almost have to have Notre Dame act as a conference team is if Clemson wants to preserve its South Carolina game, because Notre Dame would obviously be the other non-conference game, and that would be a conflict there. But yeah, so since they play eight conference games, it's you know, everybody's looking to pick up some opponents.
So you mentioned it looks like that Arkansas is probably going to be the SEC non-conference team that they play. Eric, in your estimation, what percentage would you give that game actually happening in 2020?
Well, I mean, with the plus one model, you're looking at a choice of three: Navy, Arkansas, and Western Michigan. If they decided to keep that inventory, I think Western Michigan goes bye-bye. That's a bye game where you know they're coming to Notre Dame Stadium for price, and it won't be returned. Navy, they played 93 straight years. I think that's where it gets really ticklish as far as Arkansas goes. Do they want to preserve that? Now, that game is a road game. The Arkansas game is a home game. Again, some of it is, what's the inventory for NBC? Are they going to have enough games to make NBC happy? And so the Arkansas game is more attractive from a TV standpoint for them. Navy is more attractive from a commitment of wanting to play Navy every year. You know, I think Brian Kelly would rather play Arkansas, not because he thinks that they're the weaker team, but because they're the more conventional team. Not having to deal with defending the triple option, I think, would be kind of a nice way to get into the season, rather than dealing with that and then having to switch to defending conventional offenses, which the sequence is Navy Arkansas if the original schedule had gone. So, you know, I'm not super optimistic Arkansas will take place. Obviously, there's a commitment there, and I think they would reschedule Arkansas. It's a weird series with the games being spaced so far apart. You know, I think the Fayetteville game is in 2026, if I'm not mistaken. So
25, I believe.
25, okay. Yeah. So, I mean, there's a lot of space between those games. Yeah. But I would think if it doesn't happen this year, they would make every effort, even if they had to break the contract, to get Arkansas back on the schedule.
I think every AD around the country is going to fight tooth and nail if they have to choose to keep home games. And I think with the fact that you said Arkansas's a home game for them, when you compare it to the Navy game versus the options that are on the table, Swarbrick or any other AD, losing home games, but whatever limited crowd's going to be allowed, just the cost of travel and saving that expense, everybody's looking at the bottom line. And, you know, right now, Eric, the bottom line seems to matter more today than ever before in these programs. So I think the fact that Arkansas is a home game for Notre Dame, if that becomes the option, I think that's the factor that may weigh out to be the factor that wins over Arkansas being the game that stays on the schedule, is that it's in your venue.
Right. The last little piece of it is the ACC, like the Pac-12, is now thinking about pushing the start of the schedule back. Now the Pac-12 is looking at September 19th as their start date. The ACC reportedly is either the 12th, the 19th, or the 26th. And if it stays on the 12th, then that's perfect. Arkansas is scheduled that day. If they move the game back, or if they move their schedule back to the 19th or 26th, how does that fit with Arkansas's SEC commitments? So we'll find out about that also probably middle of next week.
Yeah. You know, it's varied around the country. I'm just kind of interested. How much work, if any, did Notre Dame get in the spring? Arkansas got none in. It's varied around the landscape of college football. Did Notre Dame get any spring practice in at all?
They got one game in, and then they went on spring break, and then they were going to have their second practice on St. Patrick's Day, and they never came back from spring break. They never came back to campus. They never had another spring practice. So they did get the one spring practice in.
We're talking Notre Dame football with Eric Hansen here on the Morning Rush. Aaron, you brought up Ian Book earlier, the five offensive line starters that are back. Who else is going to give Arkansas problems on offense this upcoming season for the Notre Dame Fighting Irish?
Somebody that you guys probably haven't heard of. It's a guy named Kevin Austin. He's a wide receiver from South Florida. He was suspended last year. He was, you know, demoted to their scout team while he was suspended, practiced with the team. And they had one of the top pass defenses in the country last year. They were fifth in the nation in pass efficiency defense. And he gave them fits in practice every day. So that's the guy I would be looking out for. Maybe a second guy there would be Michael Mayer, a freshman tight end from the Cincinnati area. He's actually from the Kentucky side of the river. I'd say those two are guys that could be surprises on offense.
Eric, we had this whole thing planned out where we are going to do a radio show live from ESPN Chicago on Friday and then make our way up to South Bend. That could still happen, but it's kind of up in the air right now based on what everything's going on. From a guy that gets to cover Notre Dame, experience the pageantry of Touchdown Jesus, everything involved there, can you explain to Arkansas fans what a game day atmosphere is like in South Bend, Indiana?
Well, I'll tell you the best way I can explain it is I grew up in Ohio. I went to Ohio State, and so I had gone to a lot of Ohio State games, which is pretty rich in tradition itself. Mm-hmm. And the first Notre Dame game I ever covered was the first time I had been to an opposing stadium where I went, whoa, they have a lot going on here. And in terms of tradition and everything else, it was almost like the first time you said, wow, there are other people that know how to do this. Now, again, I had never been to any SEC schools at that point. This was very early in my career. It actually was my first year. The one thing about it is it's not a particularly intimidating place for visiting teams to play, although they've certainly up the ante in that area. But just all the cool things, the campus is so beautiful. The fans are nuts, and there's a lot of them. It's just a really, really neat Saturday afternoon. It's big Lou Holtz, who coached at Arkansas and Notre Dame both, said something to the effect that I'm going to butcher it, so I'm going to leave his quote alone, but it's something about you really have to experience it to be able to describe it.
Hey, what has Jack Swarbrick been saying, or it may not be anything declarative at this point, but which way are they leaning as far as attendance, the amount of fans are going to let in? Have they made any kind of statements at this point about their plans for fans in the stands at Notre Dame?
They haven't. When we spoke last week, he said they kind of want to have their schedule in place first before they make that kind of announcement. I know that they want to prioritize students, faculty, and staff. They want to make sure that group gets in. And fortunately for people maybe that are opposing teams that would like to get to Notre Dame Stadium, they don't have a huge student body like a place like Ohio State does. I know that they're not going to sell single game tickets. The question is, will they honor will there be visiting fans in the stadium? That's what we don't know. Now, they've modeled, I think, all different kinds of attendance figures up to probably about a third of the stadium. It seats 77,000 plus. So you're talking maybe, 25 plus thousand fans at the most. So I'm not sure how that bodes for visiting fans. And again, you have to remember in all these venues, there are local health codes in place that are going to affect things. And Indiana has for a long time been in a really good spot with this coronavirus and COVID-19. Lately, we've seen some spikes, and including locally. So, again, that could affect what happens in the stadium. But for right now, our governor would allow there to be fans in the stands and a great number of fans in the stands. They're going to have, almost 100,000 at the Indy 500 next month. As soon as we know what the schedule is, we'll know more what the ticket situation is.
But even if there were 20,000 in the stands and you were fortunate enough to get in, you're really not getting the experience of attending a game at Notre Dame.
You're not. It's not going to be the same. And so, that's the thing. We were wondering with the Clemson game if Clemson would try to kind of take over the stadium like Georgia did in 2017. That's not going to happen, obviously. But yeah, it's going to be different. This is something that we don't have any context for. But I can't imagine, you know, did you guys watch the baseball games last night?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. And so that was so weird, just kind of seeing nobody in the stands. You know, I think it would be more attractive for Notre Dame fans who had never been there to at least, you know, get in the stadium. But again, I don't even know if you're going to get many people that'll be first time fans. I can't imagine that it's going to be the same. But I'll tell you what, I hope they let me in, into the press box. And again, we don't even know if that's a certainty.
Eric, let me top off the interview with this man. Our afternoon host is actually a graduate of Notre Dame who does the show here in the afternoons. And then I have a buddy who went to graduate school for accounting in Notre Dame. And both of them have told me about the linebacker. If Tommy and I end up making it to that game, besides the linebacker, and you could tell us about that, what is another food place or bar that we have to go to before we leave?
Oh, gosh. You know, one place I tell people that I think is kind of a fun place, it's a little bit farther off campus, but the food's good there, the atmosphere is good, as Rocco's. You know, they've got really good pizza, good pasta. It's just a fun place. They got a lot of TVs in there, but it's not like, you know, a sports bar. Just kind of a cool family-owned place. I would say Rocco's would be, you know, if I didn't have to cover the game, where I would take somebody after the game.
I'm looking at the pizza right now. It looks pretty good, so I'm already hungry. It's 8 o'clock, and I want Eric Hansen, co-host of the Weekday Sports Beat and writer at the South Bend Tribune. Eric, appreciate you talking Notre Dame football with us this morning, and I hope Tommy and I can make it up to South Bend this fall.
Well, Ty and Tommy, I appreciate you having me on, and if you do get to South Bend, maybe we'll hit Rocco's as well.
Looking forward to it. Thanks, Eric. Appreciate it, man.
Take care.
You're listening to the Busch Light Apple Morning Rush Podcast, a refreshing light lager combining the crispness of Busch with the light sweetness of apple flavor.
A bright red Razorback caravan is headed to Nebraska, and this time, we're coming for the whole damn thing.
So we had a plan this upcoming college football season surrounding the Notre Dame game. The plan was for us to get up to Chicago either on Wednesday or Thursday, do the show from ESPN Chicago Studios, which I've been to, by the way. It's pretty cool. Just walk around. They have the glass windows and stuff. And then we would go to the Notre Dame game.
As opposed to what other kind of windows besides glass?
That's a good point. That's a great point. So
I'll hang up and listen.
Well, I'm thinking like a wall not showing in, but they have that. That's a great point. It's Friday. Give me a break. So the plan was to go down there and do the show from there, and then
fair question.
Tommy was going to stay in Chicago because he's not fun and he doesn't want to experience the Notre Dame.
Chicago's
fun
no fun at all.
Well, if I have that, listen, I'm staying in the college town. If I have a
I've
chance
never
to
listen, I'm 44 and I've never been to Chicago.
Chicago's a lot of fun.
I can't tell you why. There are things I want to do in Chicago. South Bend's an hour away. You can get on the train and go. There is far more to do in Chicago. I want to see Wrigley. Yes. I want to have a steak. I want to eat a pizza.
Yes.
You've done all that. That's fine. I have not done all that. I want to have some great pizza. I want to have a steak. I want to go to Wrigley.
He's also still 25, so he's still got that college bone in him.
Right. You just want to go hang out and get drunk in a college town. I'm past that.
And meet Notre Dame women.
Right.
I'm not despicable. I don't do that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. Orange is texting me. He says, I told him, I was like, I won't be drinking until after the post-game show, because when work's involved, I don't partake in alcohol. And he said, you're going to want to drink after this game.
And I want to spend the entire game day in South Bend.
But you want to go back to Chicago after that and stuff. What's the age difference? 19 years?
Something like that.
44, 25, so there's a little bit of difference.
I thought you were 34.
I'm built like a 34.
That's right. Okay. Yeah.
Okay, we'll stick with that. What pizza place of the pizza places you've read about, heard about, and stuff, is there one that stands out in Chicago that you want to go to?
I've heard about them. I would be open for yours and Arne's and others' recommend. I've heard what Lou
Malnati's,
Gino's East. I've heard about the greats.
Okay,
let's try them all.
Yeah, instead of going to steak place.
That's why we're going early. Yeah. Let's try them all.
On that note. I think we should just do only pizza when we're down there.
You know what?
Are you okay with that?
Yeah, I mean, man. Jenkins is pulling some pictures up here. Let's try.
I can't remember the place we ate at, but it was
so
incredible.
My dad has been several times for business, for pleasure, whatever. I've been to Chicago twice. Went Gino's East both times. Been to Billy Goat's Tavern, which was the legendary place where the guy, the owner, tried to bring in his billy goat to Wrigley Field. They wouldn't let him, and that was the curse of the goat. And they finally got over that when they won the World Series a couple of years back. But as far as pizza goes, I've had Gino's East. My buddy Zuss has told me Giordano's is the best. My dad swears
that's
by Giordano's. Giordano's.
Yeah, that's where we went.
My dad swears by Giordano's and Lou Malnati's as well. I've heard Uno's. I mean, there's so many
places. Yeah, the closest I've had is Uno's in Orlando. I mean, I don't think that counts, really.
Another thing about Chicago, too, what we did when we got there was the Chicago hot dog.
Yeah.
Evan in Fayetteville texts in. He says, Harry Caray steak joint is a must. Apparently, they're on point.
That's my reasoning why I don't want to spend 4 days in South Bend.
Well,
you know?
Let's reassess and readdress what I said.
Retract what he said.
Not retract. Here's what I said. If we stay in Chicago on Wednesday night, Thursday night, and Friday night, and we stay in South Bend on Saturday. Right. Or, you know what? You leave me in South Bend. I'll find a place to shack down there, and we'll be okay.
Make sure it has the glass window.
I'll stay on my side of the glass window.
So, yeah, that's B in Clarksville, Texas. And he says wood windows are all the rage these days.
They are. They're very stylish.
Will also text in. He says, glass windows. He thought that was pretty good. So that was a good retort. It's a Friday. I'm itching to get out of here and enjoy.
His hands are shaking. He can't wait to get to the bar.
Get some sun. But the question we started the segment with, and I want to get back to it, is if you don't have a ticket, if you're not 100% confirmed being able to go into the game, would you make the trip? Now, I sure as heck would. Yeah, I would drive.
Yes. I'm driving. I'm flying. Even if I have to wear the mask, if I have to wear a welding helmet all the way there, I will. Although I did see someone in the grocery store with a wrestling mask on. I thought it was you for a minute.
I've never even thought about doing that.
They weren't 6'5", so they wasn't you.
So they didn't incite fear in you?
Yeah. No, I'm not driving, number one. I will go. But if I knew, worst case scenario, I had a tailgating spot and a good TV to watch the game on campus, near campus, walking distance from stadium, that's the worst I could do. I'm in.
I just got on Airbnb, and there's a couple good spots to go to. My dad, and we got a bunch of texts in already, and Ben, we'll get to your call in a sec. If there's a place that we need to go eat in Chicago, now I know many of you haven't been to South Bend, but many of you have been to Chicago, let us know. It's 877-377-6963.
So would I go just for the experience of being on campus, touring the campus, being there on game day? I'd do that. I'd still feel cheated.
And that's fair.
And I would still probably want to, be working on the story to tell my wife why we needed to go do it again at some point, even though maybe even not an Arkansas game, because we really didn't get the
pageantry
once in a lifetime full of pageantry experience. So we got to do it again. Yeah,
My dad texts in. He says Portello hot dog, the like Chicago style hot dog. Okay. Is where you need to go. So let's go to the phone lines. Ben in Darnell wants to tell Tommy and I and everyone else where we should go eat in Chicago. Ben, you're on the Morning Rush.
Appreciate it, guys. Yeah, Tommy, there's a system to this, and you have to be prepared when you go to add on 5 to 7 more pounds.
Oh, I'm not. Hey, everything I got has elastic in the waist, so that's no problem. Yeah.
And that's exactly how you have to approach this.
Yeah, pack nothing but sweatpants,
Definitely. So
even in September.
On the pizza front of it is it's a local thing where everybody's got their spot. But for me, Lou Malnati's is where you go. The crust is buttery. The sauce seems a lot better. Overall, it's a better pizza. On the north side, there is one that is set up more like a sports bar. So if you do want to watch a game, that's where you need to be. If you're getting a dog, it's got to be Portillo's. But more than anything, you have to get the beef, and that's Al's Beef. There's about 4 or 5 locations. Yeah, any of them are amazing.
Those. Yeah, you got to have one of those. Yeah.
And make sure that when you have to have your sandwich dipped.
Yep.
They dip it in the sauce that the juice is cooked in.
And you're supposed to stand up while you're eating that so it can all kind of run out on the floor, right?
Exactly.
That's
the
how I've seen
the
it
better,
on
you
like
want
Man versus
train.
Food. That's how it's done. So.
Exactly. Right. And all of my family were all from the South Side. If anything, I can explain to you how to gain weight while there. And if you're looking for the most perfect steak, Chicago Cut is the best steakhouse in town. But you will need a reservation and bring your wallet with you because it's not the cheapest.
We may need to leave on Tuesday rather than Wednesday. So
Ben, appreciate the call. And Tommy, I'm assuming all of the activities and the eateries and everything else we experience down there will be expensable, correct?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
We're good. We're good on that. So keep them coming. 877-377-6963. Ram texts in and says Geno's East is the GOAT. Again, I've only had Geno's East of the ones listed. My dad, and apparently we just had him on from Darnell. Who did we just have on?
Ben. What?
Ben from Darnell. I apologize, Ben. Says the Lou Malnati's is really good. So I really wanted. I would like to go somewhere else besides Geno's East because I've had it, love it, but I want to try one of the other places. So back to the phones. Robert wants to talk about the Notre Dame game atmosphere. We heard from Tommy and Texarkana earlier. Robert, what's your opinion on going down to a game in Notre Dame?
I've been there, so I watched Washington play there, and it's awesome because you go down to the grotto in the morning where they light those candles, and you see the lake or pond or I don't know what it is, but it's that big body of water like you see on Rudy. Mm-hmm. It's like Rudy in that sense where all the monks and priests or whatever, they're all buried. But they don't tailgate like your regular SEC people. It's a different type of tailgate, and a lot of them carry coolers around and just talk and meet. And you don't see everybody with signs going, ticket, ticket. You see people with fingers, and they kind of just barely hold them up, and then you kind of go up to them. And it's not like this crazy ticket scene and all that. They got a bar on campus, too, that you can go to.
Yeah. So it's a Catholic cool. institution. What would you expect?
Yeah. So, yeah, I suggest if Arkansas does, I'm going to try to go if we go, but I don't know if we could be in the stands, but yeah. I'd suggest if anyone wants to and that's on their bucket list, they need to go.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest. I
appreciate the call, Robert.
I'm more on the opinion. I hope they don't play the game this year and they reschedule.
It's very warranted because we heard from Eric Hansen, who is pretty heavily connected with the Notre Dame football program, from his opinion. There's a pretty good chance that this game would get rescheduled. I'm like you.
I would rather wait 3 or 4 years.
Completely agree.
And play it, and let's get the full pop experience.
Arkansas's booked out non-cons next, 5 years?
Would you move it? I don't care if you have to play who you have to play that year. I don't care if you have to play Texas, Georgia, Florida.
Seems like the first
Alabama year. Yeah. All in a row with Notre Dame squeezed in there somewhere to do. You just do it. You know.
Seems like the first one was 2026. I think it's when the first, like when it's not booked out. I think they've got 3, but not 4.
Listen, everything's subject to change.
Push
right
it back
now. Everything's open right now.
It's a good point. So yeah, I would
rather it. Just my opinion, selfish opinion. I don't just scrap it and let's play it when you can experience it.
And you know what? Patience is a virtue. I would be completely okay
because
with that.
There's just more to it than the game.
Exactly. Tommy, on that note, on July 24th of 2020, as we're getting closer and closer to that game, if they say they're no visiting fans or they don't allow media members, are we still going to go?
Media members.
A small amount of media members and we don't get a credential or whatever. Are we still going to go? I can go or I can get one.
They allow one. It sucks for you, I guess.
I guess that's tough. So I just wanted to listen. That's subject to change like everything else in life. I'll have to do some bartering.
I don't know. Here's the thing. We've anticipated. It'd be like canceling Christmas. You know, we've anticipated it. You know, they cancel Christmas. You know,
I'm going to be very PO'd if that game doesn't happen. So because I'm really excited for that upcoming football game.
Who knows? There's just a lot that can change between now and then.
But I agree with you 100%. I would rather wait a few years to see the whole 9 yards.
The whole schmear.
Than this.
Yep.
So, because I want to experience that place for myself. There's one of the few venues in college football that I would pay an absurd amount of money to go experience.
And my plan all along is I want to go with a ticket and sit in the stands. I can get a credential, but I'd much rather go sit in the stands than in the press box. I want to enjoy the whole thing. I don't want to work.
Pick it up a little bit. Get your chin up. Smile.
This is the Bush Light Apple Morning Rush Podcast.